In 1913, while most young women were settling into traditional roles, 20-something Elsie Hayes boarded a train from Los Angeles to the Arizona Territory, embarking on an adventure that would define her life. Her handwritten journals, discovered decades later by her granddaughter, Barbara Ann Waite, reveal a spirited educator who found both heartbreak and fulfillment in the rugged Southwest. As the train snaked through narrow mountain passes, Elsie's excitement grew with each mile. "The curves are so sharp," she wrote home, "that from our window we can see the engine pulling us around the bend." This sense of wonder never diminished during her three transformative years teaching on the frontier. The landscape outside gradually transformed, California's lush greenery giving way to Arizona's dramatic red rocks and sprawling desert vistas. When she finally descended into Verde Valley, the stark beauty of her new home in Cornville, a tiny farming community nestled along Oak Creek, took her breath away. Her accommodations, a canvas-covered wagon bed converted into modest living quarters, were far from luxurious, but to Elsie, they represented freedom and possibility. "I believe I shall like it here very much," she wrote that first night. "The creek is beautiful beyond words, and the people seem so genuine." Teaching in a one-room schoolhouse presented challenges Elsie couldn't have prepared for in her formal education. Her classroom housed children of all ages, from tiny first graders to teenagers nearly her own age. Many came from farming families who prioritized agricultural work over education, creating attendance challenges that tested her creativity. On her first day, she faced a room full of skeptical faces, children accustomed to teachers who rarely stayed more than a term. Would this city girl abandon them mid-year like so many before her? Elsie quickly proved her mettle by adapting her methods to incorporate rural experiences. For mathematics, she used examples of crop yields and livestock. For literature, she organized dramatic performances, transforming her students into characters from beloved stories. "Today, we acted out Cinderella," she recorded. "Little Eva Gardner made the sweetest Cinderella imaginable, and the boys, though reluctant at first, threw themselves into their roles with surprising enthusiasm." The schoolhouse itself presented physical challenges. Breaking ice in water buckets during winter mornings, battling suffocating heat and dust in summer. Yet she approached these hardships with good humor, writing home about becoming quite the frontier woman. Despite Cornville's isolation, Elsie's social calendar soon filled with surprising variety. Weekend gatherings at neighboring farms, community dances, and impromptu picnics along Oak Creek created a vibrant social scene that she embraced wholeheartedly. "Attended a delightful dance at the Hursts last evening," she wrote. "The entire community gathered in their barn, which had been swept clean and decorated with autumn leaves. Mr. Ferguson played the fiddle while we danced until nearly midnight. I cannot recall when I've laughed so much." The young men of the area soon took notice of the vivacious new schoolteacher. Carl Hurst, son of a local farming family, became a frequent visitor to the schoolhouse, often finding reasons to assist with repairs or deliver messages. His quiet attention evolved into companionship that Elsie valued deeply. "Carl called again today," she confided to her diary. "He brought fresh apples from their orchard and stayed to help me prepare tomorrow's lessons." Thanksgiving at the Hurst residence marked a turning point in their relationship. "Never have I felt such belonging among people not my own family," she wrote afterward. "Mrs. Hurst treats me as a daughter already." Throughout her Arizona adventure, Elsie's connection to her beloved family remained her emotional anchor. Her correspondence home, detailed, affectionate, and remarkably well-preserved, provides the most vivid window into her experiences during these formative years. Elsie wrote religiously, sometimes daily. Her letters overflow with colorful descriptions, humorous anecdotes, and occasional wistfulness for family gatherings missed. These weren't mere status updates, but literary creations filled with sensory details and thoughtful reflections. "Dearest family," began a typical letter, "you should see Oak Creek at sunrise. The water catches the light in a way that makes it seem molten gold, and the cottonwoods along the banks have turned the most brilliant yellow." Her family's responses sustained her through moments of homesickness. When Christmas packages arrived from California, Elsie described opening them with childlike enthusiasm. I saved your package for Christmas morning and opened it slowly, savoring each carefully wrapped treasure. The candied fruits transported me instantly to our kitchen table. These letters served as more than communication. They became Elsie's method of processing her experiences. When faced with difficult decisions, the act of explaining her situation to her family helped clarify her own thoughts. Elsie accepted a teaching position in Williams, Arizona, a larger town with modern amenities like electricity, social clubs, and railroad connections. Unlike tiny Cornville, Williams offered a proper school building and multiple teachers, representing professional advancement and a chance to be closer to Carl, who planned to attend university. Elsie flourished professionally, impressing colleagues with her innovative teaching methods. However, when Carl visited unexpectedly, she noticed alarming changes in his behavior, scattered thoughts and paranoid delusions. Soon after, she learned he had been committed to the state asylum. "How does one grieve for someone who still lives?" she wrote. Yet even facing this heartbreak, Elsie's resilient spirit endured. The Grand Canyon, 60 miles north of Williams, became Elsie's sanctuary for adventure and spiritual solace during her Arizona years, especially while coping with Carl's condition. Her first visit, a school excursion in 1914, left her awestruck. "No photograph could prepare one for this reality," she wrote. "The immensity silences all trivial thoughts." Later, she joined a challenging guided expedition, braving narrow trails and desert heat to descend into the canyon. "The layers of rock tell a story spanning millions of years," she reflected. "My own troubles, seen against this ancient backdrop, seem fleeting indeed." After her heartbreak, Elsie found love with Jack Roberts, a Williams lawyer. Unlike her swift connection with Carl, this relationship grew gradually through shared intellectual interests and community work. "Mr. Roberts gave a fascinating talk on Arizona statehood," Elsie wrote. "He asked thoughtful questions about my teaching methods, a refreshing change from the usual social pleasantries." She appreciated Jack's intelligence, integrity, and treatment of her as an equal. As spring 1916 approached, Elsie prepared for significant changes: the school year's end, her engagement, and departure from Arizona. "By Oak Creek," she reflected, "this place, with its stark beauty and genuine people, has been my greatest teacher." She and Jack settled in Southern California, establishing an apple ranch on Palomar Mountain. Her Arizona years remained pivotal, and her preserved letters and diaries provide valuable insights into frontier education and women's early 20th century experiences.